This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 2nd, 2019. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature. The BC Liberals failed again to overthrow Speaker Darrell Plekis. I talked to Chief of Staff Alan Mullen about the chaotic end to the spring session of the legislature. And the 30th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre is on June 4th. More from journalist and author Terry Glavin on why Canada should say no to Huawei, China's flagship company. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or did the NDP make a mistake by not holding an inquiry into the BC Rail scandal? BC Liberal Premier Gordon Campbell promised not to privatize the Crown Railway when he was elected in 2001. But 2 years later, he sold it to CN for $1 billion. The company was chaired by his bagman, David McLean. We soon found out the process was less than fair and transparent. CP and Burlington Northern Santa Fe dropped out of the bidding because they both thought the fix was in. Omnitracs, the only other bidder, hired lobbyists who were bribing government workers. Only BC Liberal aides Dave Bazzi and Bob Virk were arrested. They maintained their innocence for more than 6 years. They went to trial in 2010, and on the eve of Finance Minister Gary Collins' testimony, a plea bargain was hatched. In exchange for pleading guilty to bribery and spending 2 years on house arrest and probation, their $6.4 million in legal bills were paid by taxpayers, contrary to government policy that called their legal indemnity a loan that would need to be repaid if they were found guilty. Fast forward to 2014. Bazzi and Virk got letters from Canada Revenue Agency telling them that they forgot to declare their money that went to their lawyers as their own income. CRA called it a taxable benefit. It turned out the BC government issued T4A slips to Bazzi and Virk in 2012 and sent them to the federal government, but not to Bazzi and Virk. They are appealing the tax bill to the federal tax court at a hearing in Victoria on June 24th. That means the BC Rail story gets back in the news. Will Bazzi and Virk get justice this time? If Adrian Dix and the NDP had won the 2013 election, there would have been a public inquiry on BC Rail. We are getting a public inquiry on money laundering under the Horgan NDP, but we may never know the full story about the corruption behind the privatization of BC Rail. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. ABC News Channel 7 Los Angeles reports, bomb hidden in book blows up in Mexican senator's office. A Mexican politician was wounded when a homemade bomb placed inside a book blew up in her office. Senator Citlali Hernandez suffered minor injuries to her face. Her office was filled with smoke after the device went off. Hernandez is from the same political party as Mexico's president, Andrés Obrador. In ABC News Australia, Jano Gibson reports, NASA to launch rockets into space from Northern Territory Spaceport. A tiny spaceport in a remote stretch of Arnhem Land is set to become a new launch site for the world's biggest space agency, NASA. NASA plans to send sounding rockets into space from a site 700 kilometers east of Darwin. Why there? It's close to the equator, faces east, and has little population or industry nearby. And in the Anchorage Daily News, Madeline McGee reports, spike in gray whale deaths triggers federal investigation into unusual mortality event. About 70 gray whales have been spotted dead so far this year along the west coast from Mexico to Alaska, according to a statement from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Between 2001 and 2018, the number of total recorded gray whale strandings has averaged out at just under 29 a year. This year marks the most whale deaths recorded in 1 year since 2000, when 131 whales were reported stranded. So far, five whales have washed up along Alaska's coastline this year. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. Patrania Bulsuan of Cairo 7 reports, Seattle property owner holding illegally parked car to go vehicle hostage demanding payment. Dan Smith has set up a barricade around the silver Mercedes car to go vehicle parked in front of his home near 6th Avenue North and Halliday Street in the Queen Anne neighborhood. He said the car was left there by a customer since May 17th. He now wants ShareNow, the company that operates Car2Go, to pay $65 a day for vehicle storage fees, $300 for the barricade, and up to $500 for what he calls harassment fees. In the Oregonian, Andrew Selsky of Associated Press reports, Oregon, awash in marijuana, aims to curb production. Supply is running twice as high as demand, meaning that the surplus from last year's harvest alone could amount to roughly 2.3 million pounds of marijuana by the Liquor Commission's figures. That's the equivalent of over 1 billion joints. Oregon has one of the highest such imbalances among the 10 states that have legalized recreational marijuana since 2012, in part because it had a big head start in the weed business. Retail prices in Oregon for legal pot have plummeted from more than $10 per gram in October 2016 to less than $5 last December. And last week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. Mystery surrounds Craig James's legal costs and why he was forgiven for ill-gotten gains. Evidence in the U.S. case against David Sedu contained on hard drive and DVD. And the $6 million deal that saved BC Liberals from testifying in court turns into tax trouble for Bazzi and Virk. Read the stories behind the headlines on TheBreaker.News. The spring session of the British Columbia Legislature came to a dramatic end on May 30th, as the BC Liberals left in protest after denouncing Speaker Darrell Plekis. As Speaker, Plekis is in charge of the Parliament buildings and their security. He moved to copy the hard drives of senior officials at the legislature to preserve data. That prompted the BC Liberals to try again to overthrow the former BC Liberal, who has uncovered waste and corruption that led to an RCMP investigation and the retirement in disgrace of suspended clerk Craig James. James was appointed by the BC Liberals in 2011. I spoke with Plekis's chief of staff, Alan Mullen, about the events of this week. I asked if the BC Liberals are paranoid after leader Andrew Wilkinson was taking photos of Mullen in the hallways of the legislature on May 29th, and Wilkinson's chief of staff, Spencer Spruill, spent the night in his office to guard their computers.
It definitely is, and I don't know if it's true paranoia or if it's just a desire to create this rhetoric or this hysteria by the leader of the official opposition. I'm not sure what they're basing this paranoia on. At no time did the Speaker or I or anybody else suggest that we had any interest or desire or intent to look at any members' computers or documentation or offices or their staff or any other legislative staff. For Mr. Wilkinson to be running around the hallways at 10 o'clock at night taking pictures of me, I don't know what that's based on. I find it bizarre.
The Speaker is ultimately in charge of the legislature, and like any employer, he has the right to know what employees are doing with their work tools. I asked Mullen why it is important for Darrell Plekis to preserve the information.
First and foremost, we're talking about the administration. We didn't seize anything. We didn't clone anything. We did a backup of the hard drives of the two administrators, as well as the head of the administration being the Speaker. Nothing to do with staff. It's the administration. Now, why did we want to do this? Because we have had at least five separate incidents in recent memory where information, documentation, and at times evidence have gone missing. Disappeared into thin air, whether it be information on computers or hard copies. Information has gone missing, and when investigators or other interested parties go looking, we have to say I'm sorry, we don't have that information. And why? We have no idea. We didn't want to be in that position again. We wanted to say, look, can we back up this information? So then if necessary in the future, an investigator or other interested parties come in and say, can I have this information? We are not in a position again where we have to say, we don't have that information. The speaker has a responsibility to ensure that information is not only stored and available, but is open and transparent. And that's why we felt it necessary and prudent, given that we've had information go missing, given that we've had documents disappear, to back up these hard drives. That's it. We didn't want to create this shroud of secrecy. We were open and honest, and we sought approval and agreement from those two individuals that we did back up their computers, and they gave their consent.
BC Liberal House Leader Mary Pollock was at the May 29th meeting with members of the Legislative Assembly Management Committee, including Speaker Plekis, and she held a news conference the next day and revealed some details about that meeting, including showing reporters her notes, which aren't verified, but she appeared to breach the confidence of that closed-door meeting. In those notes, they talked about a possible Police Act complaint and that there could be 19 charge areas involved in the police investigation of Craig James and Gary Lenz. Pollock is no rookie. She's a former cabinet minister who knows the rules and knows the traditions of confidential meetings within government and the legislature. Will this breach her trust with other MLAs?
I don't want to speak too much to, you know, those notes, simply because I would echo the complete shock and dismay that the House Leader for the Third Party, Sonia Fersenau, stated yesterday. Why would Mary Pollock release notes at all? That was a meeting with the Speaker and the House Leaders. Gary Begg, who was the government whip, was in the meeting in place of the government House Leader, who was in estimates. That was a private meeting. And at no time should those notes have been released. And if you're an individual in any meeting and you're taking notes or minutes, would you not then go to the other members of that meeting and say, I've been taking minutes, have a look at them to confirm their validity, just that I actually captured what we all spoke about here? She didn't do that. But then she releases them to the media. I question very, very seriously and very sincerely the validity of a lot of the items in those notes. I mean, I know certainly, you know, suggesting that the speaker would call Justice McLaughlin stupid is utter nonsense. He has the highest regard and respect for Justice McLaughlin. He did reiterate what he's already said and what I've said. He was disappointed in her report, but not in her. He was disappointed in her terms of reference. He was disappointed in the amount of time she had to conduct her investigation. And given those very narrow terms of reference, he was disappointed that she didn't have the opportunity to speak to witnesses, to see supplemental reports, and to gather all the information. But at no time did the speaker call Justice McLaughlin stupid. That is absurd. That is just utter nonsense. But to release those notes, I know that, you know, the speaker echoes what Sonia Fersenau said. Utter shock and dismay that she would release those notes to the media of a very private and closed-door meeting with the speaker and the House Leaders.
On the last day of the session, the BC Liberals tried to overthrow the speaker. They offered to the NDP to replace Plekis with a BC Liberal MLA. The Liberals also denounced Plekis one by one, including Assistant Deputy Speaker Joan Isaacs, who was wearing her robes. Was this offer to replace Darrell Plekis given any serious thought?
It was a genuine offer by the official opposition, but I would echo what Premier John Horgan said yesterday in his media address. We had a Liberal speaker in 2017. Who resigned. Then Darrell Plekis took on the speaker role. And we have a speaker. To echo John Horgan, we have a speaker. His name is Darrell Plekis. And we would not have known any of this information about all the misspending and wrongdoing at the legislature had it not been for Speaker Darrell Plekis. So thank you for your offer, but we have a speaker. And again, to echo John Horgan, he will remain speaker for as long as he wants.
With the turnover in senior positions at the legislature's police force, should British Columbians be concerned?
Well, I don't think I or the speaker or anybody should be concerned with the quality of officers. The Legislative Assembly Protective Services Group, i.e. the Leg's police force, they're a great group of people. They're professional. Most, if not all of them, are former police officers for the RCMP or municipal forces. They do a tremendous job. They are highly respected professionals in their field, and we have no concerns about them. We have no concerns with the work they do. Yes, there is still outstanding issues with regards to the Sergeant-at-Arms. That's why he remains on administrative leave. Mr. Ennis chose to retire. I was aware of that. He told me that at the beginning of April. So that's 2 months ago that he had planned to retire at the end of session. We need to look at the outstanding issues, but to say that we should be concerned about the actual Leg's police force, I don't believe we do. I think they do great work. They've just become unionized. And again, it's been suggested by the opposition that they became unionized for fear of the speaker. No, not even close. They became unionized at the suggestion of the speaker. And the president of their union, Ed Ely, would confirm that. It was Speaker Plekis who suggested that they should be unionized, and they agreed. We have a great working relationship in the Speaker's office with Protective Services, and we expect that great working relationship to continue.
I ended by asking Alan Mullen what BC should watch for in the days to come.
The session has ended, as you know, and members are back in their constituencies and doing, continuing to do the great work that they do for their constituents. But I think, we're just not done yet. We need to keep on plowing ahead here and not get lost in the political posturing or the name calling or the finger pointing that some members feel they need to do. We need to keep our eye on the ball here and say, look, we still have a police investigation ongoing. They are doing diligent work. You might want to keep an eye on that. The Auditor General and her team are doing their audit, their forensic audit. You might want to keep an eye on that. We are continuing to do our workplace review. And as part of that workplace review also, I'm going to be doing this review across the country. And I'm going to be happy to be able to share that information that I find about best practices with the general public of British Columbia. Because people are saying, look, this is our institution. We want better. We deserve better. And, just keep going. At the end of the day, we have to get it right here. And let's not get lost in this political posturing or name calling. Let's just all grow up. And to echo Dan Ashton, member for Penticton, who you will not meet a more honorable guy. Let's work together here. Let's put our heads together. Let's cut away the political nonsense and say, how do we all work together here to make this a better place for the people of British Columbia?
Alan Mullen, Chief of Staff to Speaker of the British Columbia Legislature, Darrell Plekis. Thirty years ago, on June 4th, 1989, the Chinese Communist government sent the military into Tiananmen Square in the center of Beijing to violently snuff out a pro-democracy movement that captured the world's attention. 10,000 people were killed, and a generation of Chinese have been kept in the dark about the massacre. In the years since then, China was welcomed into the World Trade Organization. It hosted a Summer Olympics, and it was given a Winter Olympics. China now leads the world in surveillance and in oppression of its own people. Yet, it became the world's second biggest economy. The 30th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre coincides with a global debate about China's flagship telecommunications company, Huawei, and whether Western countries should let Huawei be involved in building the fifth-generation communications technology networks. I spoke with Terry Glavin, the award-winning journalist from the National Post and Maclean's, He said that Canada and other Western countries need to say no to Huawei.
You know, the fact that we're actually having this conversation in Canada is something that is really quite mind-blowing. You know, a lot of people have this misapprehension that clouds their thinking on this subject, that suddenly, you know, this crazy man, Donald Trump, has got us into this fight with China that we didn't pick. And poor little virtuous Canada were caught between these two hegemons. This is nonsense. This is absolute rubbish. For one thing, there is an astonishing bipartisan consensus in the United States about China and about Huawei. As I always like to say, if you think Donald Trump talks trash about China, you should hear Nancy Pelosi sometime, or Elizabeth Warren. When you've got, you know, that hard right weirdo Steve Bannon and the liberal free trader Democrat Thomas Friedman agreeing about China and Huawei, we should probably sit up and take note. Fun little fact, the first story that I wrote about Canada being warned away from Huawei because of their intelligence and security function, and also because of the work in Iran and evading American sanctions in Iran, was 8 years ago. This is not new. It was the Obama administration that was first warning us away from Huawei. The Obama administration, it goes back to the days of George Bush. You know, Obama prohibited anyone with affiliated with Homeland Security. I mean, even if you're in a fire department in rural Montana, you can't use Huawei gear. And we thought we were really smart, you know. The China lobby thought, great, you know, we will take advantage of this. We will invite Huawei into Canada. We actually subsidized Huawei. Millions and millions of dollars we just gave them to open up campuses in Ontario. I remember Martin Cauchon, the former Liberal cabinet minister at the time, I guess it was 2011, he's now on the board of the Canada-China Business Council, and you know, this is the way of all flesh with these people. Said, well, if you can't beat them, join them. And that's been the attitude from the very beginning. And another really difficult and awkward bit about the conversation that we need to be having now is that the news media has been, in its way, sort of complicit in this. I really have to take up my hat off to Steve Chase and Bob Fife at the Globe and Mail for the work that they've been doing lately. The Globe and Mail was useless, worse than useless, on this issue when Ed Greenspan was the boss. And as soon as he left, the Globe and Mail started to act like an actual newspaper when it came to China. But we all still allow ourselves to sit there while Jean Chrétien is trotted out and sort of, you know, passed off some sort of sage statesman who will, you know, represent the Canadian view of these subjects. Jean Chrétien has been employed by Beijing Dacheng and its Canadian affiliate for, what, 10 years now? 15 years? He works for them. The Canada-China Business Council makes no, you know, doesn't fool around about this. They don't just represent Canadian corporate interests in China. They represent Chinese corporate interests in Canada. That's what they say. It's just, as I say, normalized, I think, is that we've come to, we're all busy, right? We're trying to get the kids off to school in the morning. We're trying to, you know, run to the bus, get to our jobs. And when you sort of see this stuff unfold in the paper and it's, you know, you have Justin Trudeau's smiling, happy face as he's skating on the ice in Maple Leafs jersey with, the Chinese Premier Li Keqiang. And, It's normalized, right? That's the thing. It happens, and it's happening in plain sight. And suddenly, when these monsters begin to show their fangs, we actually have to sit up and notice. The whole thing sort of falls apart. And ordinary Canadians who have always been consistently skeptical about a free trade agreement with China, these unseemly intimacies that we're always cultivating. The way the federal government has approached this issue has been to manage public opinion. The challenge is always, how can we convince Canadians that they're wrong and we're right? They're all openly whinging about the domestic political considerations that inhibit their further intimacies with China. I mean, we had, until a few weeks ago, John McCallum, if you don't mind, was our ambassador to China. He was a cabinet minister. He considered being appointed ambassador to China to be, a promotion. John McCallum took $73,000 in free trips to China before he was a cabinet minister. I mean, this is the kind of thing, it happens in plain sight. We say, this is just the way it happens, it's the way of the world. This is normal. It's not normal. It's not normal.
That was Terry Glavin joining the Breaker.News podcast from Vancouver Island. The virtual Nanaimo Bar brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to labor regulators in British Columbia. The tide has changed with the labor-friendly BC NDP government, but it is a shame that it took a change in government for this to happen. What is it? Well, first the Aquilinis, the billionaire family that owns the Vancouver Canucks, was slapped with a $130,000 fine for mistreating temporary foreign workers at one of their blueberry farms. Now, the Kiewit Construction Company and two of its managers have been charged with criminal negligence causing death. In 2009, 24-year-old worker Sam Fitzpatrick was crushed by a boulder at a Kiewit hydro project in BC while his brother watched and could do nothing. It's a sign that big companies can't rely on big political donations to stay out of big trouble anymore. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting. Custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 2nd, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on June 2nd in 1979, Pope John Paul II began a tour in his homeland, Poland, becoming the first pope to visit a communist country? A decade later, the Iron Curtain began to fall. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.